Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMCortho.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. WAMC's listening area is one of the most line-endemic areas in the entire United States. This includes the Hudson Valley, where Dr. Richard Horowitz, a board-certified internist practice, is, maybe I should say, the most important board-certified internist practices. An estimated 300,000 Americans are diagnosed each year with a tick-borne illness. It's on the rise, and a recent CDC report says 10 times more Americans contracted the disease than previously estimated. It is spread through the bite of an infected blackleg tick. It's highly treatable infection marked by fever, headache, fatigue, and a characteristic skin rash. Dr. Horowitz happens to be an expert on Lyme disease and treatments, co-founder of the Hudson Valley Healing Arts Center in Hyde Park. He's formerly the Assistant Director of Medicine at Vassar Brothers Medical Center in Poughkeepsie. He's also the author of Why I Can't Get Better, Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease. If you haven't got it and you think you have Lyme disease, get the book. Again, Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease. Number 10 on the New York Times list of best-selling science books. Dr. Horowitz, thank you so much for being here with us. It's a little hike. You practice down in Rhinebeck, the Rhinebeck area?
Yes, it's in the Rhinebeck area, right. Hyde Park.
That's great. Okay, so there are a lot of things I want to get started with. 1-800-348-2551. Let's ask a couple of questions. You have an amazing thesis, which is that it's a lot more than Lyme disease. What do you mean?
Well, what's happening in my patients is that these patients who come to see me, who've seen 10 to 20 doctors and they're chronically ill, what I'm finding is that they have up to 16 things wrong with them. And I call this Lyme MSIDS, multiple systemic infectious disease syndrome. And what this means is these ticks are containing other infections than Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. So they're getting parasitic infections like malaria, it's called babesia, or they're getting cat scratch fever, Bartonella. And a lot of the doctors aren't looking for these other infections. It's keeping the people ill. And they also sometimes can't detoxify chemicals. They have food sensitivities. The hormones are thrown off. They don't fall asleep. A lot of these studies that were done on Lyme didn't address all of these factors that I'm finding are keeping my patients chronically ill.
So when somebody asks the question, why can't I get better? That's why.
Yes, and that's what the book is about. It's basically the 16-point model, having seen up to 12,000 chronically ill people who've been to 20 doctors and say, I'm still sick. Why can't I get better? And this is what I found.
What can you do about, let's assume, you know, you do a study and a blood study and you find somebody has Lyme disease and these other things. Do you create a specific cocktail that reaches all of the things, antibiotic cocktail that reaches all of these things?
Yes, that's exactly right. So in other words, the Lyme bug, the spirochete, has different forms. It has a cell wall form, can go inside the cells. They're now finding it in biofilms, which are like the plaque on your teeth, so the antibiotics can't get to it. So we create regimens that go after these different forms of the Lyme, and we also at the same time will create regimens to go after these malaria-like organisms like babesia. And the way you know you have babesia, by the way, if you're listening, is if you have day sweats, night sweats, which can be drenching, chills, a cough you can't explain, air hunger where you can't catch your breath and you've been diagnosed with Lyme, these malaria-like symptoms tell you babesia may be there. And they're keeping a lot of these patients ill.
How omnipresent is Lyme in all of us? Roselle and I in Great Barrington, there are deer in our yard every night. We've been in our gardens. We never get out of them. But we don't have chronic symptoms. But are there people who have the disease in them, in their bloodstream, where it's not active?
Yes. I mean, of course, there could be people that just get small levels of spirochetes and they have a very healthy immune system and they don't get that sick. But I think what happens to many people if they don't get sick is they think they're just getting old. You know, they have aches and pains, their memory may be a little bit off, they're a little tired, and they just say, I'm stressed, you know, other things, they're accounting for it, but it may just be they have a very mild case of the disease.
So let's talk a little bit about Alzheimer's and Lyme. what somebody on the other end of the radio is saying, what is he, nuts? But there is a relationship.
Well, you know, interestingly, there's a researcher by the name of Dr. Alan McDonald, and he took brain biopsies from the NIH databank of people who had Alzheimer's, and he found up to 70% of these people ended up having the DNA of Lyme disease in their brain. Now, that doesn't mean Lyme caused Alzheimer's, but the model that I'm working with for chronic disease is that it's a multifactorial model. So Alzheimer's is an inflammatory process in the brain. It could be that there are many infections. Lyme disease could be one of them, with environmental toxins like mercury, many different reasons why you get inflammation in the brain. And, you know, the problem for our country right now is that 75% of our healthcare costs and 70% of our deaths are chronic disease. And we don't even have a chronic disease model. So Alzheimer's disease is one of these emerging problems, and we don't have a model. And I'm suggesting to the CDC, NIH, and agencies, let's look at the model that I've used, and let's see if it helps people with this disease.
Well, now that you've mentioned that, you've been called to France to lecture the government there. You've been called to China to lecture the government there. And yet the United States doesn't really have a comprehensive policy yet, does it?
No, I mean, I think it's something that I'm trying to set up. We're in the middle of talks right now to we can all come to the table because there's not adequate communication between the doctors in the fields, the troops that are really seeing these sick patients. There's not enough communication with the researchers in the labs who are talking about it. We all need to get to the table and talk about what this disease is, where our successes have been, where we need the research to go. And I think communication and open dialogue and compassion for these sick and suffering people who are really, really sick. These people are as sick as patients with chronic congestive heart failure, and we're not really doing much about it. There's a medical debate. What is it? What isn't it? We need to get to the table because we have answers for those of us who've been in the trenches, and I think an open dialogue is really necessary.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have three phones that are ringing. We have two more. This is your time to get online and do it. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You know what? First, we're going to take a little break so that we can have more time in the middle. Go ahead.
Support comes from St. Mary's Healthcare, Amsterdam, New York, offering minimally invasive spine surgery. Choose stmarys.com. Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center's Graduate Social Work Program and Graduate and Undergraduate Nursing Programs, hosting an open house Thursday, February 27th, 6 p.m. St. Francis Hospital Medical Arts Pavilion, adelphi.edu. Marriott Town Place Suites, Albany Downtown, offering studio, one- and two-bedroom suites with fully equipped kitchens. Amenities include indoor pool, breakfast, local transportation, Wi-Fi, and parking. tpsalbany.com for reservations. And Premier Medical Group, gastroenterology, urology, internal medicine, endocrinology, geriatrics, nephrology, and pulmonology with offices throughout the Hudson Valley. PremierMedicalHV.com.
I told you we'd be right back with Dr. Richard Horowitz, who wrote, Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease on the New York Times bestseller list for a while now. So let's go to Bob in Great Barrington. Okay, Bob, you're on. Is it Rob?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me, guys?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question because I've been reading a couple studies lately that are showing that there's another tick-borne illness that I don't believe is Lyme or maybe an offshoot of Lyme that is attacking the heart and causing some pretty nasty ramifications in early death and otherwise normal adults. Just wondering if the doctor can shed some light on some of this new tick-borne illness that's going on out there and ways to either treat or diagnose in a faster method.
Okay, Dr. Horowitz.
Right. I mean, it's a great question, Rob. I mean, the thing is Lyme does cause heart problems. There were some recent articles that showed up about Lyme carditis, meaning Lyme caused inflammation in the heart, and some people have died. In fact, there was one in the Hudson Valley close to us. But your question is whether other tick-borne diseases do it, and the answer is yes. There are, for example, tick-borne diseases like Q fever, Coxiella burnetii. It's a tick-borne illness. It's like Rocky Mountain spotted fever. It can cause a chronic endocarditis. And several of the tick-borne infections can cause inflammation in the heart. What happens, most of my patients will come in and tell me, though, they have palpitations. They constantly complain of chest pain, palpitations. They go to the cardiologist, they get ultrasounds, they get stress tests, they get Holter monitors, and they can't figure out what's wrong with them. And a lot of times it turns out it is Lyme disease.
But Rob, in case you came in late or anybody else came in late, what we are hearing from Dr. Horowitz is that when you look at the tick-borne diseases, it's much more than Lyme. There can be 16, 17, 18 other possibilities, right?
Yes, there are many, many other tick-borne diseases. In fact, one that's just showing up called Borrelia miyamotoi. It's a relapsing fever from Japan. They just found this in San Francisco 2 weeks ago in the parks. They found it in New York years ago in 10 to 20% of the ticks in the Hudson Valley. Now, there's no reliable blood test for this disease, and it's a Lyme-like illness. So you could get a bullseye rash. You could get a meningitis, a Bell's palsy, women could have miscarriages, and it could be due to this particular borrelial species, which is Lyme-like. And there's been no reliable test until recently. New Milford Hospital came up with one, but most of the doctors don't know
about
it.
New Milford Hospital, of all places.
Yeah.
So it gets across the world, gets to China, gets to France. How does that happen?
Because the songbirds and the birds are carrying these ticks worldwide.
Interesting. Okay, Rob, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, guys.
Let's go to Bjork in Westtown. Okay, Bjork, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
We're good.
Good. I've got a question. My wife had Lyme disease several years ago. She's gotten over it now. But she's been having some other issues lately, and she was recently diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which I don't know a lot about it, but it seems to me that, you know, it's one of those things with, you know, no test. It's kind of becomes the diagnosis when other things are ruled out. And a lot of her symptoms sound a lot like the babesia that you were describing. And my question is that something, if it was so long ago that she had it, would it have worked its course by now? Or is that still a possibility that that could be what's leading to some of these other symptoms?
No, you're asking a great question, Bjork. I mean, the thing is that most of the patients who see me who have continuous health problems and who are diagnosed with things like chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia, the way you know if it's still Lyme is the following. Usually people have good and bad days. The symptoms tend to come and go. The joint pain or muscle pain will migrate around the body where one day it's in one joint and 2 days later it's someone else. They may have tingling, numbness, and burning sensations, Lyme neuropathy. It comes and goes and migrates. Women will say around their hormonal cycle, they're worse. If you take an antibiotic, you might get better or you might get worse, which is a Herxheimer. So that's kind of the way you know if someone still has Lyme in the body, because from the studies I've seen in my experience, it is a chronic persistent illness. But it is these co-infections that are really keeping a lot of these people sick.
You just said Herxheimer. What's that?
Okay.
Yeah, Herxheimer.
Wait 1 second. Oh, wait 1 second, Bjork. I just asked a question. Go ahead.
Yeah. When you're killing off the spirochete that causes Lyme disease, people can get these reactions called a Herxheimer reaction. What it is it's a worsening of all of your underlying symptoms.
Interesting.
Yeah, there are these inflammatory molecules that are produced, and they make people very sick. They're tired. They have headaches. Their memory doesn't work. And it's from killing off the organism.
Bjork, go ahead.
Okay. One quick question. I'm in my car. Don't worry, I'm pulled over, so I can't write any of this down right now. Do you guys have a podcast that I can review later for these answers?
Well, that's up to Alan. This is all in my book.
You can give anything you want. The book, let me remind you, is Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease. It's a huge book, and it's got
an
awful lot.
I'll look that up on Amazon
it.
As soon as I hang up.
Yeah, that's where you'll find it, all right. I have to say this because they get mad at me, at your independent bookstore.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot, Bjork.
Could I ask one more super quick question?
Okay, go ahead.
If she were to go into, you know, to see her doctor and say, you know, my husband heard this on the radio, is there any specific battery of tests that she should specifically request?
Well, the answer would probably be to get your doctor, if it's not a doctor that sees a lot of Lyme, to read my book and to call me, because I speak to health professionals all the time. You do want to check for other tick-borne diseases like ehrlichiosis, anaplasma, babesia. The problem is the blood tests are not reliable for all of these tick-borne infections, just like with Lyme. So you have to understand the pros and cons of how you order the test. But I'm happy to speak to your doctor if they have questions.
Bjork, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Mike in Catskill. Mike, your turn. You're on, Mike.
Okay. I'd like to say I'm very interested in Lyme. I've done a lot of research myself, and I have some kind of theory on it, and I'd like to talk to Dr. Horowitz about it. I was a park ranger. I also live in Greene County, and we have a bad situation with Lyme. Both of my dogs had gotten it. I've been bitten probably 20, maybe 25 times by ticks and never got Lyme disease. I'm wondering if it's like poison ivy. Some people, you know, can just breathe it in and get it, and other people can roll in it. And I'm wondering if it's, there's if the certain maybe certain chemistry in the body that makes people immune to it.
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I mean, the ticks are normally attracted to body heat and carbon dioxide. If you've had tick bites, it's also possible, of course, either the ticks weren't long enough and you got them off in time. But not every tick, obviously, contains Lyme disease.
No, I know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very possible, of course, that you've got a great immune system and are able to fight it. But, of course, I've seen patients who are, you know, weightlifters at 24 years old that are in bed from this disease. So it could just be that the ticks where you got bit just were not containing Lyme or some of these other co-infections.
Okay, but we don't know for sure if people can be. I mean, there's nobody that's been, you know, in an experiment, for example, that was bitten by this exact tick and not gotten Lyme disease. We haven't never got to that point, I guess.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Years ago, they did try and take uninfected ticks and put them on people to get them to see if they could have immunity. And they did find that actually that was one way to try and stimulate immunity in people. It's possible you've been bitten by ticks multiple times and have developed some form of immunity. That's why they're looking to do the vaccine.
Yeah, and while I'm at it, Mike, I'd be very careful about recommending to anybody that they roll around in poison ivy.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Mike, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, we got something online at WAMC.org. Says, quote from Lois, "My doctor is terrified about losing his license if he continues to treat me. Can this really happen still in Massachusetts?"
Well, your question is whether there's a political situation that exists in the United States. And the answer is yes. There have been medical boards who have done disciplinary actions against certain doctors across the United States. And unfortunately, this is the state of the art controversies.
For taking Lyme seriously?
Well, you know, the problem is that there's two sets of guidelines in the United States. One is by the Infectious Disease Society of America, the IDSA, and the other by ILADS, the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society. And I'm one of the founding members of ILADS. It's two sets of guidelines. We have two different ways that we diagnose and treat, and sometimes people take sides in the debate.
Well, it sounds pretty stupid if you're going to start taking people's licenses away for doing what they think is right.
Well, where this is dangerous, in fact, this is a spreading epidemic, and this is literally like you're in the army and you're shooting at your own troops in the field for trying to help people. You should not be taking sides in a debate when we don't have all the answers.
Good for you. Okay, thanks a lot for that. Let's go to Amanda in Belchertown. Amanda, you're on.
Hey, how are you guys doing? I get two questions. First off, is there a quick test that can be done, say, at every checkup to see if you have Lyme disease?
Well, you know, Amanda, your question is most doctors, they learn this two-tiered protocol of doing a test called an ELISA. And if that test is negative, they never do a Western blot. The problem with it is the ELISA test will only pick up about half the people with the disease. And even the Western blot, there's 100 different types of Lyme disease in the United States and 300 types worldwide. Even the Western blots won't always pick up the Lyme. So, you know, I use Lyme-specific bands, and I call this Lyme bingo. And for anyone who's listening, you may want to copy down these numbers. If you get a 23, 31, 34, 39 or 83, 93 band on a Western blot, that means you've been exposed to Lyme disease because these are Borrelia-specific bands. So that's a quick way of knowing, but that's not using CDC criteria. When the CDC and health departments did this, this is for epidemiological reasons for health departments to screen large populations. The CDC themselves said you should not use that criteria for diagnosing people. So there's no easy quick test. The answer is it's a clinical diagnosis. There's a questionnaire in my book. It's on page 32 that if you fill out this questionnaire and you score over 46, we have found that a lot of people do have what I call Lyme MCIDs, and we're going to validate the screening questionnaire now in many doctors' offices.
Gotcha.
Thanks, Amanda.
Can I have one more?
Okay, real fast.
Alzheimer's?
Go ahead. Yep.
You said the Alzheimer's brains have been found to have Lyme disease present. Now, are they clustered in the Northeast? I mean, Alzheimer's seems to be almost a worldwide thing going on. So Lyme disease seems to be clustered in the Northeast. Are there more Alzheimer's patients in the Northeast?
Well, no. I mean, Lyme disease is a worldwide epidemic. When I lecture in Europe, it's throughout Europe. It's gotten to China. When I spoke to the Chinese government, they told me up to 6% of their population had Lyme. So,
right, but it's both a map.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, it's not just in the Northeast. So I don't know that anyone's looked at those figures. But, and again, I'm not saying Alzheimer's is caused by Lyme. I think where we're going in the future is we need to look at the multifactorial nature of these chronic diseases, that it's not going to be one thing, that there may be many things causing inflammation.
Gotcha. Okay.
Thanks, Amanda. Okay.
Bye.
Let's go to Larry in Hancock. Larry, you're on.
Hi. I think actually you may have actually answered most of my questions from listening to the other callers. I had a question about the Babesia. I had close to 20 years ago, I had the rash. The doctor that treated me did not wait for any antibodies. He just decided to treat me right away. At that time, 20 years ago, I don't think Babesia was even considered. Is there a possibility that that infection, if I have that, could still be latent or present in me right now?
Yes, that's a great question, Larry. Yes, in fact, it could be. Babesia is a chronic persistent infection in many of my patients.
And what is it again?
Babesia is a malaria-like organism.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So it's it kind of looks like malaria. It's day sweats, night sweats, chills, which can be drenching sweats, air hunger, cough, and all of your Lyme symptoms are worse. But definitely Babesia. I've seen Bartonella, cat scratch fever, persist in these patients. I've seen Mycoplasma persist. I see actually many different persistent infections, and I think it explains why many of these patients who are diagnosed with chronic Lyme stay ill.
Yeah, I don't have any Lyme-like symptoms since the treatment, and I've actually never had either the ELISA or the Western blot. Like I said, the doctor saw the rash and treated right away.
Right. When you get treated early, that's essentially how you can cure Lyme. And you can cure Lyme 75 to 80% of the time with early intervention. And thank God your doctor did that. He did a great job in preventing a lot of suffering for you, because I've seen people really suffer who've come in, who've seen 20 doctors and are chronically ill for years.
So is it possible that in Larry's case, or somebody can, if he had the Babesia, that they give him a traditional anti-Lyme antibiotic, is it possible that that even may not be the top of your protocols, but that it might cure his problem?
What will happen is if you can knock the Lyme down, then the co-infections, your immune system will probably handle the co-infections a lot easier. There are people who can get over some of these infections when Lyme's not there. So, that is the trick.
Okay, hey, Larry.
Okay, so I guess the last question with regards to that is, do you think I am at risk 20 years later? Because I do have night sweats and chronic cough. Do you think it's worth me going to see the doctor to look at the Babesia as a possibility?
Yes, absolutely. The thing about medicine is you've always got to get back to what we call a differential diagnosis. So if you've got sweats and you're a man, it's not early menopause. You look for things like high thyroid, hyperthyroidism. You look for tuberculosis if you've got night sweats and a cough. You look for TB. You look for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. You look for malaria. You look for things that cause night sweats. But Babesia in someone who's had Lyme would certainly be on the list, but your doctor needs to know that the standard testing for Babesia may not pick it up, called Guillain-Sustain. It's looking under the microscope. And there are different strains of Babesia, Babesia microti, and another one called Wa1 duncani. I'm finding that almost 20% of my patients have different strains of Babesia. So your doctor needs to understand these different tests for Babesia, or you may not pick it up. And Igenix Labs in California, for example, does what's called a FISH test. It's a test where you look under the microscope and Babesia will fluoresce green. It's an RNA probe. Many doctors don't know to do that test.
Okay.
Thanks, Larry.
We
can't do any more only because the phones are really loaded. I want to give everybody a chance. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Lois in Granby, Mass. Lois, you're on.
Hi. I was bit by a tick in 2000.
Hello.
Wonderful. Classic symptoms of Lyme disease and did not get treatment. One of the most horrible side effects that I am undergoing is gastroparesis, palsy of the gut, and they have, over the years, I've spent tons of time in a hospital vomiting my guts up. I'm I receive TPN. I receive IV antibiotics through the port. And I'm just trying to figure out, you know, we're getting to a desperate point, the doctor and I, and we no longer know what to do, and he feels he no longer can keep me on the antibiotics. What can be done to help me?
Well, I'm going to assume that probably you have other symptoms apart from gastroparesis. So, for example, gastroparesis is it's one of the chapters in the book on the autonomic nervous system, which is the part of the body that controls your bowel and your bladder and your heart rate.
Yeah.
And I have, in fact, a case in the book about someone with gastroparesis who was vomiting. When you treat the Lyme and the co-infections and you use this 16-point model that I'm describing, and you find out all the different reasons. So, for example, maybe you're magnesium deficient. For example, about 25% of my patients lack magnesium. You're vomiting. Maybe you're nutritionally deficient. If you don't have enough magnesium or minerals, your GI tract may not work correctly. So I basically use the 16-point model to go through patients who have these chronic persistent symptoms to see what we can do. And that would be what I would suggest to your doctor. And again, if your doctor really gets stuck, please have your doctor call me. I'm happy to speak to them on the phone about it.
Okay, because I do have the full palsy. I need medicines to move my bowels. I had a J-tube, but that was a nightmare. So, you know, it's like something has to stop this. It's been since 2007. And when they take me off the meds within 30 days, I'm back sick, violently ill.
And this is what I hear from most of my patients. If your doctor's willing to read the book and speak to me, I'm happy to talk to him about my experience of how to get the autonomic nervous system back in order.
And by the way, I want to mention,
do that.
I want to mention the name of the book, Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease by Richard Horowitz, MD. Thank you very much, Lois. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
One to a customer, I always say, but here's somebody, our friend Bill, who asks the following questions. Could you tell us what tests you use to determine that a person of any of these many tick-borne disease or co-infections, and how reliable are these tests? What tests do you use? Two, what is your treatment protocol for chronic Lyme? In other words, Lyme that is not detectable by normal Lyme tests. This is a PhD thesis, by the way, folks. Three, what is your success rate and how do you measure it? Four, how much a full course of treatment costs? I have friends who have gone to Lyme specialists and the fees are astronomical. How many indigent people do you treat? Thanks, Alan. Well, I don't want to get into that. I mean, I think, frankly, this is a up against the wall question. So I want to ask you real quickly, is there any part of that that you want to answer?
Well, I think with the testing, it's important for people to realize with the testing and treatment that the tests really are not reliable and that you need to know the ELISA test. I mean, I hardly do it at this point, but I do use Western blots. I do screen for Anaplasma, Ehrlichia, Bartonella, Babesia, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. There's a whole host of tick-borne infections you screen for. But I also screen for hormone problems and nutritional deficiencies and a whole host of other things that keep people sick. And the treatment courses that I find really work for people is that the Lyme disease has these different forms, as I was explaining earlier. So if you treat the cell wall forms and the cystic forms and the ones that go inside the cells and the biofilms and you treat the co-infections and you treat all the abnormalities on the 16-point map that cause inflammation, like you get them to sleep, you get them off allergic foods, you treat the hormones. A lot of doctors don't know that Lyme affects the pituitary. And you can get low adrenals and you're very tired, not just from the Lyme, but your hormones are off. Or men in their 20s have low testosterone, like a man of 80 years old. It's from the Lyme. Doctors don't know always to test for the hormones. So the key is keep going back to the 16-point map. I've seen over 12,000 people, and this has really been the key for me of how I get people better.
Okay, so let's go to Scott in Kerhonkson. Scott, you're on. Scott. Hello.
Hello.
Okay, you're on, Scott. Go ahead.
I received my first tick bite in 1987 with a bullseye and never really paid any attention to it. And then over the past how many years since then, I've been bitten many a time. In 2006, I was put in a hospital, and palsy in my face was red and blue, and a very large bullseye behind my left, my right leg. They started me on IV antibiotics and did a spinal tap, and when the spinal tap came back, inconclusive, they switched me to doxycycline and then continued to just load me up with pain medication.
Scott, because we're up against a little bit of a pause here. So can you give us the question? What's the question?
Well, the question is that after being on 38 courses of antibiotics and tried, you know, everything from homeopathic to Chinese herbs and everything, and right now I'm going through a Chemet detox for all the heavy metals, is there other underlying issues that could be affecting the immune system? Because all the doctors that I'm seeing, except for my infectious disease doctor, basically are telling me there's absolutely no way after 38 courses of antibiotics that this still can be Lyme, even though the blood work comes back positive.
Well, I mean, your question comes back to what I was saying before, which is that if you don't treat all of the different forms of the Lyme, all of the different co-infections, and many of these other abnormalities on the 16-point map that I'm describing to you, people will stay ill. So, I mean, the answer is, could you still have persistent Lyme? The answer is yes. I've seen it. The medical literature says it. The NIH just did a study two weeks ago where they talked about persistent DNA in people with post-treatment Lyme. So it can persist, and this is part of the controversy. I would again say to you, go back to that 16-point map because that's really how I've had the success.
And that map is in Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease by Dr. Horowitz. Hey, Scott, we got to take a break. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. All right, everybody. That leaves one free phone. These phones have been ringing off the hook. We'll be back in seconds.
Support comes from The Alternative Baker, Rosendale. Small batch, all butter, handmade baked goods, plus egg sandwiches, vegan soups, and hot chocolate. Lemoncakes.com. Ellis Medicine, providing comprehensive cardiology, neurology, oncology, and emergency care services. Reinventing healthcare one patient at a time. EllisMedicine.org. Mount St. Mary College in Newburgh, master's and online RN to BS in nursing degree programs for adult students, postmaster's nurse practitioner certificates in adult and family health, msmc.edu, and College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com.
Thank you, Zachary. Okay, we're back. Let's go to Tom in Amherst. Tom, you're on.
Hello, doctors. My question is, Dr. Horowitz mentioned that ticks are transported worldwide by birds. I was wondering, this may sound silly, but I was wondering if people that kept bird feeders, if they were putting themselves at risk, and what could they do to prevent, if they were, what could they do to prevent tick bites? And my other question is the doctor's book available for download on Kindle?
Yes, the book is available for on Kindle. If you go on Amazon, you can do it. So, you know, your question about bird feeders is a great question because I'm an animal lover and we have bird feeders in our backyard. We've gotten to the point at this point where we just protect ourselves from the ticks. So it really is the protection that's important.
How do you do it? Gloves?
Well, I mean, the first thing is we put permethrin spray. There's a spray that you can get. It's from Chrysanthemum. Uh-huh. You get it in most of the stores. You can spray your clothes. You take the clothes outside and spray them. It helps to repel the ticks. Hmm. You can use natural things. There are certain essential oils, and even Avon Skin So Soft may help on the skin.
Yeah.
You do tick checks when you come inside. You know, the fact is it's not just a bird feeder. I mean, anyone that goes through the woods and walks, you have to really do tick prevention.
You got to take your clothes off.
Take your clothes off and you know, work with your wife and your significant other to make it a pleasurable experience of doing tick checks.
Or not walk in the woods.
Or not walk in the woods, exactly.
Yeah. Tom, so you got your answer, Tom?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay,
bye.
Let's go to Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet, you're on.
Hello. This is great. This is the best information I've heard on Lyme ever. I have a couple of questions. I've been bitten many times, and sort of like as a matter of course, I get a test, a Lyme test every year, and my doctor always does the Western blot But recently, last fall, I found a tick on my leg, on my calf. And unlike any other tick, because I do tick checks all summer, like every half hour kind of, constantly, and I find them. This tick, when I took it off my leg, the bite spot, there was no bullseye, but there was this huge reaction with it. Got swollen and hot and painful, unlike any other tick bite and that I've had, and I have had many.
Okay, so Harriet, because Harriet, there's so many people behind you. If you could just ask the question, that'd be great.
Okay, well, I'm wondering about that. And then the doctor gave me the doxycycline, like two doses, and I wonder about that protocol.
No, so it's a good question. I mean, the thing is you can get localized reactions around the tick bites. We do see that from people all the time. So the thing is regarding antibiotics and tick bites, in Woodstock, New York, you're living in a highly endemic area.
Yes.
So the real question is, how long was the tick on for? Was it, you know, a female tick? I mean, the problem we're facing now is that even the nymphal ticks, you know, they're quite small. And
yeah.
Even the larvae, they're now finding in these other Borrelial species, which are Lyme-like organisms, the mother ticks are passing it on. You may not even see getting larvae or nymphs on you.
Oh.
So it's really become a big problem. And, you know, the protocol of giving two doses of doxy, which was done by Dr. Wormser and published, there was no long-term follow-up in that study. Usually what I do is if a tick is on for several hours embedded and difficult to remove, or you've squeezed the tick and it's been difficult to get out, I will give antibiotics for several weeks to these people, because when you see the suffering that people have with chronic Lyme disease, you just realize that a couple of weeks of doxy, as long as they're staying out of the sun and don't get a sunburn, and you give them acidophilus and probiotics to protect the gut, you're fine. I mean, the risk-benefit in medicine, I think, especially in an endemic area where you're living, you should definitely do it.
What about what about the vaccine that was on the market and disappeared? And also, dogs get over Lyme very quickly. And what about that?
Well, dogs, I mean, are some of my favorite people on the planet. And some dogs, no, they are. I love animals, and especially dogs. Dogs do get very sick from Lyme, and they do have, of course, collars and vaccines. The problem is we don't really have a good vaccine at this point. There's a new one that's going to be coming out from Baxter. It needs to be studied, because in the last vaccine trial, people got some serious reactions, autoimmune reactions, very, very sick. And that happened in the animals. So I hope they do the proper studies before the vaccine comes out. But the problem, again, is that vaccine is not going to cover all the tick-borne co-infections. And that's something that people need to be aware of.
Harry, got to let you go.
Thank you
very much. Okay. Murray the dog, we're always taking ticks off Murray. Should we be careful about handling the tick?
If you remove the tick properly, it really shouldn't be a problem. But it's true. You've got to be careful with the dogs. They do bring them into the house.
Oh, you sure do. Okay, let's go to Jim in Pennsylvania. Jim.
Are there any immunity due to other spirochetal diseases such as leptospirosis or rickettsial diseases such as Rocky Mountain spotted fever?
Not that I've seen. I mean, you're asking a good question about cross immunity. I've never seen it in the scientific literature that any of these other tick-borne infections will protect against Lyme. It's possible there's something out there, but I've never seen it.
Okay, thanks
Jim. All right, and that brings us to Rick in Ulster County. Rick, you're on.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Horowitz, for being on today. I would really like to see more hours, if not days, of programs like this, because there are so many people suffering. I have been suffering for 7 years. I've managed to survive on the Booner Herbal Protocol, which I think, Doctor, you use some of those herbs from that protocol. Is that right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. It has managed to afford me the ability to work, but I'm not cured. I have the classic fibromyalgia stuff. I would love to be able to afford your services. I've had difficulty, and that's the whole problem with the insurance and everything. My test was negative from the very beginning and has remained so, and so I never was able to get the intravenous antibiotics, which may have ultimately helped. I can't say at this time. But I'm calling particularly in regards to my wife, and she has been ill about the same amount of time that I have. She got ill not long after I did, very slowly, progressively, and it became very neuropsychiatric, with no joint or muscle pains. and hence she ended up going the psychiatric route, and she's stuck there.
Okay, so what's the question, Rick? I'm sorry, but there's so many people.
My question is, have you dealt with patients that have had come from psychiatric realm that have been misdiagnosed and stuck in the psychiatric department, if you will?
Yeah, it's a great question. In fact, one of the chapters in my book is on neuropsych Lyme. The thing about Lyme is, as the great imitator, it imitates every psychiatric diagnosis that you will find in a doctor's ICD-10 manual. So, for example, there was an article that just recently came out on minocycline helping people with schizophrenia. I've seen schizophrenics, for example, who I got off their psychiatric drugs with a tetracycline. Lyme will mimic OCD, anxiety, depression, psychosis, every type of psychiatric disease that imaginable. So if you have a multisystemic illness where you have fatigue, joint pain, muscle pain, tingling, numbness, memory, and psychiatric symptoms, that's really how you suspect it in someone. But not everyone, of course, gets the joint aches and the muscle aches. But yes, it does mimic all these psychiatric.
Yes, I have other friends that have not have developed the more physical pain, but have the mental problems and the memory loss and sort of Alzheimer-ish kind of thing. And so I'm wondering if there's any research that's been able to differentiate why some people are not getting the more physical stuff and other people are getting the more mental stuff. Is it just the strain?
It could. There are many different strains of Lyme. Some people have more co-infections. The co-infections make them much sicker. Like Babesia will make the psychiatric symptoms three times worse.
All right, now I'm going to throw out the big bomb here. Sexual transmission?
Well, it just got released about a month ago. Dr. Stricker had done an article that was published in the journals that they were finding spirochetes, both in vaginal secretions 100% and men sperm 50% of the time. We don't know if it's still transmitted, but it's a big question mark at this point because it is a spirochetal infection like syphilis. So you're asking the big question.
Hey, Rick, that's it. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Yep. Okay, let's go to Pat in Albany. Pat, go ahead.
Hello, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. I have a dog who was just very recently diagnosed by his vet as having a very, I guess, mild case of Lyme tick fever. My question is, do my husband and I run any risk of catching or contracting anything directly from the dog? The vet says no, but I'm a little bit nervous about this.
No, there's no way that you could possibly get it from your dog. There's no transmission that would happen that way.
Well, that's a comforting
point. Although Murray does lick us in the face all the time.
Oh, good.
Hey, Pat, thank you for the question. Okay, let's go to Melissa in Chatham. Melissa, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I was successfully treated using the IV Rocephin method, but it's been a couple of years since then, and I still suffer inflammation response if I'm not vigilant about my diet. Very small amounts of sugars, carbs, and alcohol cause inflammation, headaches, internal bacterial imbalances. I already take daily probiotics and try to eat an alkaline-based vegetable-heavy diet because I find that it helps. But what I'm wondering is, can this be resolved, or is this my new normal?
It's a great question. I mean, what sometimes happens with antibiotics is people can get what's called leaky gut, where you can get spreading food sensitivities from being on antibiotics. Some people get candida, yeast problems in the gut. If you have not been checked for food sensitivities, we find that a lot of our patients with inflammation, they do have food sensitivities, and half of my patients probably have blood sugar swings with reactive hypoglycemia. The bugs definitely feed off sugar, and many people have alcohol intolerance. So getting a food sensitivity profile would probably be one of the first things you might want to do. There are many different labs out there that'll do it at this point.
Melissa,
okay, and is that something that I would pursue through my general doctor?
That's correct.
Thanks.
Okay, and as a follow-up question.
No follow-up question, only because we're backed up to the wall here, Melissa. I'm so sorry.
All right, well, thank you, doctor.
Don't want to be a meanie. Okay, we've got a whole bunch of people. Jeff wants to know, please describe what the New York State Office of Professional Conduct is doing concerning physicians who aggressively treat chronic tick-borne diseases? Any answer to that one?
I really don't know at this point what the official stance is.
Phyllis, your old friend, our common friend Phyllis from the Hudson Valley calls it. Can you discuss psychological manifestations of late Lyme and other tick-borne diseases? We did that a little while ago, but you want to...
Right. I mean, the most common psych symptoms that people get is anxiety, depression, OCD-type symptoms.
Yeah.
A lot of people will find that, for example, they get in the younger kids, they get defiant disorders where they're disobeying their parents. But again, as we talked about before, Lyme will mimic every psychiatric manifestation. But the most common ones are clearly anxiety and depression, where people go in, I'm tired, I'm achy, I can't sleep, I'm depressed, and they're told they have fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue.
Exactly. Okay, that's good advice. And then from Jennifer, hi, Dr. Horowitz. I live in the Hudson Valley. I've had Lyme for at least two times. First time I was 7 months pregnant, was treated quickly. Second time I had it, did not catch it for several months. I now have been diagnosed with RA and don't really believe I have it. I have moving aches, pains, chills, tingling, burning, exhaustion, mental fatigue, memory difficulty, etc. I feel like I'm getting old, although I am only in my early 50s. I'm interested in becoming a new patient of yours, but you are not accepting new patients. What's your advice? Read the book.
Well, regarding rheumatoid arthritis, it's a great question you're asking, because people can get an overstimulated immune system and get rheumatoid factors that are positive, but they don't have true rheumatoid arthritis. There's a test called the CCP, cyclic citrullinated peptide. It's a specific marker for rheumatoid arthritis. So if you have roving pains that are moving around your body all over the place, that are migrating with the tingling numbness coming and going, migrating, that is the hallmark of Lyme disease. You don't get migratory joint pains with rheumatoid arthritis. It's bilateral, it's symmetric. You're describing more somebody who's got a persistent Lyme infection, maybe with co-infections.
And Diane wants to know, my daughter's 19, been sick for 3 years, had Western blot done, two bands positive, been on antibiotics for 2 years, no better with symptoms. Have you any recommendations for a doctor for us to see in Alabama? You know anybody down there?
I don't know docs in Alabama, but if they contact ILADS.org, ILADS, the ILADS. International Lyme and Associated Disease Society, ILADS.org, they will find Barbara Buckham, who's the one of the medical directors there. She'll help you to find a doctor in that southern area of the U.S.
Okay, B, you're on the air, but you've only got a second or two to give us your question. Go ahead. B.
Oh, hello.
Very quickly, B, you only got a second. Go ahead.
Okay, I'd like to know what my guru, Dr. Horowitz, knows about necrobiotic xanthogranuloma, which is a skin disease that's related to Lyme and also associated with smoldering multiple myeloma.
Okay, wait, Doc, you have less than a minute to answer the question.
Okay, the only granulomas that I've generally seen with this disease, and I've seen over 12,000 people, have generally been associated with Bartonella, which is cat scratch fever. We have seen people. So it's true that Lyme can present with these atypical skin manifestations, but they're quite rare. Bartonella would probably be the one I've seen most commonly that causes granulomas in these patients.
Thanks, B. And very quickly, Lewis wants to know, what is the best treatment to beat Lyme?
The key for beating Lyme at this point is you've got to make sure you address all the different forms of these different spirochetes, these bacteria, not just doxycycline, not just amoxicillin. You've got to combine the treatments to hit all the different forms of the Lyme, treat the co-infections, go to that 16-point map. That's how people get
better.
Thank
you for calling, Lewis. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, but not today. Tomorrow, maybe. Underwriting support for the Vox Pop comes from Toprosin, pain relief creams that are natural biomedicine formulas bridging the gap between conventional medical care and natural medicine, Toprosin.com. We're just about out of time. Thanks, everybody who called in, and thank you, Dr. Richard Horowitz. It was great to have you here, and the name of your book, one more time, is Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease, Richard I. Horowitz, M.D. Thanks, everybody else for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.